welcome to Bagel Tech Big, the weekend show from the Bagel Tech Network with me, a very tired Ewan Rankin, who fell asleep on the sofa this evening in front of the telly watching the rugby and still doesn't know the result. But never mind, I'm awake now, just got two big huge bags under my eye. I'm joined this evening by some fantastic new people, or people that haven't been around for a while, one of them anyway. Mr. Dane Golden. Hello, pal.
Hello!
You're back.
Here I am, after I'm back. How are you doing?
After your self-imposed exile, you were never coming back at all.
The revolution.
You've gone quiet, dude. Have you got a bit more volume there? You got a bit.
The cultural revolution. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you. Your video's gone a bit blocky as well, but never mind. How's things been since we saw you sort of 3 months ago?
I've been keeping busy and started a new podcast. If I am audible.
Yes, you are audible.
Okay.
So the new podcast is
Facebook This Week or FTW.
That's got a kind of ring to it, hasn't it? I've seen that a lot on tweets. Did you take?
They've all been talking about me.
Did you take about the patent on that or the copyright on it? Trademark.
No.
I now own. Well, you own Hay, so you might as well own FTW as well.
I thought they went together.
Did you check if FTW.com was available?
It's not available.
Oh, that would have been a cool one, wouldn't it? So, how's the podcast gone? You've got one under your belt, and that's it.
Yeah. Last week we had Ben Parr of Mashable, Shira Lazar of CBS News, and Mark Million of CNN. And I think the closest thing, it's a little bit like This Week in Google, but I think we're going to stray further afield and deal with a lot more marketing issues and advertising and cultural issues, because Facebook, I think, is a lot about cultural trends as well.
I mean, we were saying before we started there that if you're into Facebook, you're into Facebook, and you're really into it. Otherwise, it's kind of a bit of a laissez-faire thing, you know, you just don't take part. So you've got a very niche market there, potentially.
I hope so.
Good. Next to him is our sysadmin, Sarah Jane. Hello, missus.
Hello. How are you?
Good. You've had the day at home, I take it.
I have, yes. I've been watching that event.
That event. The event that shall not be named.
What, Doctor Who?
Voldemort.
No, not Doctor Who.
With the Archbishop of Canterbury, a.k.a. Voldemort.
Yes.
I'll take that back because he's probably quite a nice bloke. Good week.
I've had a very good week, thank you very much. Ended on a very high note yesterday, which was good. Good way to start the weekend, which was brilliant.
Excellent. You can't tell us any more than that, I take it.
I was expecting that I would be working this weekend because of things happening and getting everything done before I head off to the States next week. But it went so well yesterday that, despite a long day, that I was able to get everything done that I needed to, and means I got the weekend off, which was fantastic.
So when are you going to the States?
A week tomorrow, Saturday, the 7th of May.
Really good. I'll be on rugby tour. I'll be drinking at that point. Below Sarah.
Come on over, Sarah. Come on over to our side.
Well, you guys have got to all have lunch, surely.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be in San Francisco in about 2 weeks' time.
Send an email.
Is this one of those things where you're traveling 6,000 miles, therefore you'll all get together to have lunch, but actually you guys are like 5 hours apart or something stupid? There's no grasp of distance.
I don't think it's quite that bad. I know Eric's in San Francisco, and I assume you are as well, Dane, aren't you?
Yeah. Come on over. Let's have lunch. We'll drive down the Lombard, the craziest street in the world.
Curly Street. I've seen
Lombard
that.
Street, yes. Yeah, we'll see.
Below Sarah, we got Carl Swagger. Hello, mate. Fresh as a daisy.
Yes.
In manure.
Hey.
And it's boiling hot already, he says.
So. Yeah, for some reason. I don't know. It's already 91 degrees and it's 5 a.m. here. So, yeah. I don't know. It's been hot for the last few days. No rain and nothing.
Good kip?
Not really, to be honest. I'm struggling a little bit. I was just so excited to get here. And now that I'm here, I got the coffee in me. I'm ready to go.
Bit of advice, mate. When you get up at 4:30 in the morning, go to bed early. Not at 2:30 in the morning, which is your usual trick, isn't it?
Yes, Father, yes.
There you go. Sorry for that. And finally, Mr. Eric Lanigan. Hello, mate.
Hey, guys.
of talk tech talkback fame. How did the show go yesterday? I didn't get to tune in because I was flying.
It was decent. Not one of the best, but I kind of disclaimed at the beginning that it would not be because I'm still getting over that cold. It's like most of the symptoms are gone, but my ears and like my sinuses are more clogged up than ever. My eustachian tubes have not drained yet.
You looked that up, didn't you?
No, that's from you telling me that last week.
I did tell you that, but you didn't believe me, I didn't think. So you've obviously verified.
Well, no, actually, I knew that those were related more to balance. And because of exactly what I had, I thought maybe that wasn't what I had specifically. But yeah, now that I've heard more people say that, and that probably is what's going on in there.
thank you. Right, the week in technology. Bugger all. Absolutely nothing worth talking about, I don't think. It's been the crappiest of crap weeks for technology. I don't know if it's like kind of a lull before the storm, perhaps, or something, when we get IMAX next week and then the world goes ballistic again. But it really has. Of all crap weeks that we've had in the last year, this has been the crappiest week, no?
I think the biggest story has been the Sony leak.
The thing over the PSN outage, because that was going on last week, wasn't it, when we were broadcasting, but we kind of stayed away from it. I was well chuffed to find out that we predicted the Wii 2 weeks ago. Huzzah.
The Wii.
You heard it here first. They've got to be replacing the Wii soon, surely. And then 2 weeks later, lo and behold, we're right. In terms of spec, we're probably going to be completely out by a mile. But the PlayStation thing, I mean, was this got any worse in the week? Because I kind of feel that all the stories I've read have just been a confirmation of the fact that it was as bad as people thought. You know, it was a DDoS attack, and then all of a sudden now it turns out to be a leak as well as.
Ars Technica is reporting that people are emailing them that their credit cards indeed have been used fraudulently.
No.
Oh, boy.
Because this is just after Sony said encrypted.
Oh, yeah, exactly. They said that it was supposed to be encrypted. I said this on The Daily Show today. Don't believe Sony. Now, it's true. Don't believe Sony.
Really? So an external intrusion appears that a hack was more serious than the company is initially letting on. Yet another apologetic posting in the PlayStation blog. Sony says your name and address and emails you and may have been obtained.
Yeah, it's strange because Ars Technica did put out that story that said that they had people writing them saying that their credit cards were compromised. They cited one reader who emailed them and said that he only has ever used that credit card for one thing ever, basically, which was the PlayStation Network. Besides that, he keeps it in a drawer for emergency use only. And somehow that was compromised and people were charged up to like over $1,000 in some cases. But then they went back and put an update on that same article that I just had seen yesterday during the show. And it basically then said that credit card data was not compromised. But then if you follow the link to what Sony actually wrote, they said they have no evidence that it was compromised and it was stored encrypted. But they said due to an abundance of caution, they do recommend that you change your credit card number and keep, or at the very least, be very diligent about what charges you see show up there. And the people emailing ours seemed to be more than just a coincidence in terms of incidents of credit card fraud around the time of the security breach.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because, I mean, confused you will be if you start looking into this, because I've got two stories open here in the browser and neither of them seem to know for sure that there definitely is or definitely isn't. But the one story is definitely saying that that Sony have admitted that the PlayStation Network has been compromised. And that credit card details have been released, and the encryption bit
and
is
address
BS.
And birthday, which are the way of stealing your entire data.
Well, your name, your address, your email address, your username, your password, your billing history, and also your credit card data have been obtained. Unquote.
Oh well, wait. Now, okay. So, where are you seeing that? Because I've not seen that from Sony.
This is a Tech Radar article that's not confirmed from Sony. It's the may have been.
Yeah, if you look at blog.us.playstation.com, I'm looking at it right now. It says, was my credit card data taken? It says, while all that information was stored encrypted, there's no evidence at this time that it was taken, but we cannot rule out the possibility. If you provided your credit card data through PlayStation or Curiosity, Out of an abundance of caution, we're advising you that your credit card number, excluding security code and expiration. Oh, that's written strangely. Your credit card number and expiration date, but not security code, may have been obtained, but they have no evidence yet. But perhaps other sites looks like have.
I mean, let's see. Go ahead, Carl.
I was going to say, well, let's see. We've got hackers into the network. Check. All right. And then the hackers got our information. Check. So if they've been able to do this, don't you think they probably went a step further and got our personal information as well and our credit card number, Sony? I just don't believe a word this company is saying anymore. I mean, we've heard all week, oh, no, you're safe. Oh, and then we're not sure. And then maybe you should keep an eye on your account. And then they've kind of did this wishy-washy all week. To me, Sony is really in very hot water over this.
Is that just standard? Is that corporate damage limitation, though?
I think so. I think it's just, but to me, when something on this scale has happened this big, you've got to be up front with customers already because you've obviously screwed up righteously from the beginning. I think we're going to see even more come out next week about just how bad the damage is from the consumer side. We're only hearing the wishy-wash right now from Sony.
And this is all
absolutely. It's it kind of reminds me of the tsunamis and the nuclear power plants. It's like it only starts to come out later. They keep it a secret at the beginning. So on that blog, on their official statement, they say that the data, all the personal data, including your passwords and the answers to your security questions, you know, at your birthday, which can identify you in all kinds of ways, along with your address, purchase history, and of course, name, that database was stored unencrypted behind a firewall, but totally unencrypted. This unbelievable. Is Sony, one of the biggest corporations in the world, and especially in electronics and computers. And they don't think that maybe they should put a password on all of the security on everyone else's passwords.
What's a firewall? What are them things? A firewall? What's that?
Oh, no.
Oh, the door locks as well.
And actually, you come to think of it, modern password technology does not actually store your actual password anywhere on their server. They store a hash of it, so they don't actually have access to your password. So that in the event of a data security breach, a hacker would not actually see your password, but rather have some hash of data that, without the company's private keys, they would not have any ability to do anything with. But it sounds like Sony was storing your passwords in clear text, unencrypted, which is just inexcusable. And for them not to have alerted people for a week after the data breach had happened is equally bad, because when something like that happens, worst case scenario, where your passwords and security answers, which could be very personal, like mother's maiden name kind of stuff, you've got to nuke that information from every source that you stored it with. You have to erase all instances of that password anywhere and everywhere. You have to change any security answer that you may have used on any other site that used that, because all that information is linked back to you at the most secure level with the birthday and your address and everything. So that is the first thing that hackers now could try, trying to impersonate you and hack your identity or finances or something in any other venue.
Which is why I never put my correct birthday address on any website. Every website I've got has got 1st of April. And that's it.
My birthday on Facebook, not my real birthday.
Good. But then let's put this in perspective, because don't forget, of course, there's been the Facebook scam running around this week of your invitation to the royal wedding. Have you seen this, the name?
No, what's this? You said on Facebook?
Yeah, on Facebook. There's been a chain letter going around through Facebook where you play a game whereby you create your royal wedding invitation name. And it's basically you take Lord or Lady or something like that, and it tells you to use I can't remember what it was, but it says use the name of the street where you were born, then use your
mother's maiden name,
your mother's maiden name. So it's Lady Smithington of Neville Shep. You know, as a hyphenated name at the back or something like that. And that's been going around this week on Facebook. Graham Cluley, your best friend, Eric, at Sophos tweeted it out. And I went to the article and it was it was very, very clever the way that they'd done it, because it did look very innocent. And actually, the results that you got from it were hilarious. It really did give you a very good... let me have a look for that. But I mean, that in terms of, as I say, perspective, that has been going on all week, and people have been divulging their mother's maiden name, the street address for their first house, which is going to be, again, a classic security question, and your first pet's name, which again is another security classic. So people have been giving this away free of charge, effectively, without any hacking.
So it just goes to show all you would-be data hackers out there and personal identity thieves, if you're going to do this, at least have some fun with it.
Yeah, I mean...
at least put a smile on people's faces as they give you their most sensitive data.
Well, thing with Sony is, by the look of it... Sorry, Sarah, go ahead. I was just joking. Comment.
She had a wobbly statement to make. You go ahead, mate. Don't worry.
Well, no. I have the same wobbly statement. I'm just saying it to me, it looks like Sony just kind of sit as a hacker. You would have to look at Sony and go, God, this is, you're asking me to come in. Well, thanks for leaving the door open. I'm going to teach you a lesson. I mean, a lot of times you'll see hackers that will do this, that'll just say, obviously, to these companies that since you are doing the wrong thing, we will teach you a lesson. This seems to be a bit step further, though, if people's credit cards are starting to get charged and everything else. I was actually hoping it wouldn't come to that. What do we have? Like a little over a week ago, we were seeing some communities that were a little ticked off, shall we say, with Sony that about jailbreaking the PS3 and... It makes me wonder if that's where some of this is actually coming from.
Well, apparently Anonymous has denied it. If Anonymous is actually a legal body that can actually deny that it didn't do it. But apparently they're saying that the people that are just pissed off at the fact that they couldn't get Linux on their PlayStation anymore aren't the people that have done this.
Yeah, I suspect
I was going to say, wouldn't it be the same group of people, though, the same type of people? I mean, we are talking about geeks and hackers here, aren't we?
Well, yeah, but usually in the case of a if you can call it a moralistic hack, someone feels they've been morally wrong and
like a DDoS attack,
an equal amount of revenge. I think normally something like a denial of service attack or something would be more along the lines of what they would do if you. Sorry, I was about to say that it was because of a weak outage, but I got confused what the issue was. It's the Linux issue, I think, right? So I think if they were trying to, you know, stick it to Sony, they would do something that more attacked Sony, like a denial of service attack, as opposed to what happened, which seems to be a very momentary and, single point in time breach and thievery of this data, which really harms the people, the people in question, the customers, much more than it harms Sony.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. In terms of their network, yes, it's a bad thing with the reputation and so on, but it's not going to cause them to, they're not going to go out of business over this, whereas people could lose serious amounts of money over it.
Yeah.
I mean, the scam that I've got, I found it here, you shouldn't reveal your wedding guest's name. It's a scam that's been going around through Facebook users. They're encouraging each other to reveal their wedding guest name. So what you have to do is start with either Lord or Lady, then your first name of one of your grandparents' names. Your surname is the name of your first pet, and it's double-barreled with the name of the street that you grew up on. There we go. So what you'd end up with is Lady Edith Spanky Rushmore was an example. And actually, I did this for myself, and you get some absolutely fabulous answers. But if you do it for yourself and just keep it and have it as a titter between you and your local family. Don't post it on Facebook, but that's what's been happening. People have been posting it on Facebook. And of course, within there, you've got three of your classic security questions.
Mm.
I can offer that I use... Two main password techniques. I use a combination of Super Gen Pass and Last Pass, depending on the situation.
So
I found those very helpful. So that there's never the same password for any two sites. Not that that would help in this instance, because they gave away much more information. But at least they wouldn't be able to log in on the other sites.
Yeah, I mean, does the 1Password thing save you at all here? Because you can't use 1Password on the PSN, can you?
I don't use 1Password. I use LastPass and SuperGenPass.
So these are programs that manufacture a password for you that you then have to use and type in manually yourself. They're not automatic generators.
Well, they can do that. SuperGenPass is a free bookmarklet that you use on any web-connected platform, and it creates a hash of the name of the URL and your master password.
Right. So that would have worked.
I was going to say, Ewan has a point, though, Dane. In this case, I think that with the PlayStation Network, it has to be a password that you can type using a PlayStation controller and the on-screen keypad.
So you're saying that in this case, unless I could remember or store that obscure password, it would not have helped.
Exactly.
See, I'm really worried about security of my passwords, and in order to stop it from being an issue, I've got them all taped under my desk on a piece of paper. And I'm serious. It is the most secure method possible. The only thing I've got to worry about is Briny getting under the desk and ripping it off and eating it.
This is going back to the 80s. That's what they did in war games.
Well, but the point being is that as we've got more technologically advanced with stuff and passwords and the ability to then hack and get passwords, probably the best place to keep reminders of passwords is physically on paper and pencil. Because
I'd agree. Yeah.
It's also written in a way that I know exactly what it's for. So every single website that's listed there, or every single service that's listed there, Twitter, BagelTech, that kind of stuff, I know exactly what that's for. But it doesn't actually say the URL, and also the password is initials of what's in the password. It's not the password.
You've made up your own hash.
Yeah.
I was going to say, one of the things I've heard to do is actually to leave out letters so that you know what they are, or leave out every fourth letter or something like that, but enough so that if somebody finds it and is able to use it, it won't work. But if you get it, then you know where the missing letters are and you can put them back in.
Because I don't want to go with a 1Pass solution where 1Pass is controlling my life. And I'm not because I'm scared of it or anything. I just don't see that as a really good, particularly good idea. And I also don't want to get to the situation whereby I can't control my own life because my brain's a sieve. I'm 44 years old and I'm starting to forget simple, obvious details. And I've got a set of passwords. I've got holy crap passwords, which are the things that I really, you know, they're 15 characters long that only I would know. I've got some be careful passwords, which are probably about 8 to 10 characters. And then I've got some, I couldn't care less. I'll tell you what they are now passwords if you really want, at sort of 5 and 6 characters.
What are those?
I can't
actually,
tell
yeah,
you.
Ewan, because you've given us, like I say, your birthday now.
Anyone
is
got
April
a pen
1st,
and paper?
So we know
I'm
going to
write these down.
Okay. Let's see what else. We know we keep your passwords under the desk. So I could, if I get in your house, okay, so I know where to look for those things.
I've been
and
there.
And then
Carl,
I know where the duct tape is.
Them.
So I can strap you to a chair and tell you where, you can tell me where I'm supposed to enter those passwords.
Duct tape's right over there in the first wicker drawer. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah. Yeah, if I ever find myself at your house, I'm going straight for the desk.
Yeah, me too, next
but,
time.
But, here we go. Even if you get the paper, you wouldn't know where to go. You would have no idea on the URL, and you'd have absolutely no idea on the password.
Now, see, that's smart. I haven't heard many people discuss that as a security mechanism, but that seems to make a lot of sense, as you say it.
I wrote it down.
If you can come up with sort of a personal hash that only makes sense to you, where you're obscuring both the URL and the actual password, and only provide like the first letter or so that would jog your memory about what the unique and not, you know, dictionary searchable passwords would be and their special characters, I just off the top of my head, that seems like a great solution.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, and coming from you, and it's amazing.
Get. I just got to, because I've lost track of the chat room there, and I want to see what the chat room's saying, because they're usually a greater barometer for good ideas than I am.
It sounds like your cool thingy, your sticky notes.
Yeah, here we go. Crucial saying, you can't hack the paper remotely. I'll get a webcam up and point it at the paper if you want.
There is one flaw, Ewan.
Go on.
What happens if your house burns down?
I'm screwed.
Or someone steals your wallet or something. And I also will say, though, something like that obviously is very important for, you know, your top level passwords, the thing that would get you into the thing that stores your passwords, or things like the PlayStation Network or Xbox, where you have to, where you, using a tool like that is impossible. You have to use their keyboard, and so you have to have it memorized. But I remember that Steve Gibson a few years ago did a, or maybe less than that, did a very thorough analysis based on his research of, I think it was LastPass. And he concluded that, that really is the best solution for storing and managing passwords over any other option. And I know he really gets into that stuff and really knows what to research. So I trust him when he says that.
Yeah, I mean, Security Now is one of those podcasts that if I listen to it, I've got to sit down and listen to it, because it all makes a lot of sense. And but I can't have it on in the car. It's a podcast I've got to sit down at a desk and listen to, or sit down in a chair with the TV off.
Yeah,
which is good. Which is good. There should be podcasts like that. You know, it's not entertainment in that sense. It's information.
It's educational, yes.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not trying to say that's a negative about the podcast either. I think it's a good podcast.
Yeah. Makes you want to see a chalkboard.
Yeah, no, there is. Dude, give me pictures. Because you lost me. Give me stickmen here. What do you mean? Dane, you mentioned the Delicious purchase.
I did.
Delicious has been snapped up by YouTube founders. What's your take on that then?
Chad Hurley and Steve Chang, right?
Yeah.
So here's guys that they made their first buck in PayPal creating that. Then they created a little video sharing service you may have heard of. And then now it sounds like they're done with that and saying, well, what do we do next? And here's some, if you think about Delicious, everyone was like, oh, Delicious is going away because Yahoo said on some some keynote that they wanted to sell it, internal keynote. But well, no.
That was my first understanding, was that A, Delicious is dead on its feet. Obviously not.
Not if you can make some money off it, I guess. But let's look at some of the factors there as relates to our new world order. One, they have a huge database of users. How many, I don't know, but as I recall, they kept that database distinct from Yahoo. They combined the Flickr databases, but they kept Delicious distinct, as I recall.
Right.
So you have a distinct, large database. Now, what do people do a lot of the time on Twitter, for instance, or on Facebook or these other services? They're sharing links. Mm-hmm. Delicious already has that built in. They have a big user base. They have a loyal audience. What other types of things could you start incorporating with that? You could have a public space, a private space. You could have photos. It's already the type of thing that you might see along with these like buttons or tweet buttons on articles. I mean, people have been people have moved away from the addit.org, or I think it was called the addthis.org model, where you have 1,000 links. Pretty much the only thing people link to now is not even Delicious anymore. Just Twitter, Facebook, and occasionally stumble upon, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a you know, Delicious already has one of those little emblems, and it's something that people are very comfortable with. I could see, you know, depending, I could actually see them building an entire Facebook-like network around this. I really do.
Do you think they get the leverage to move it forwards into severe profitability? Because, I mean, the question would then, that's in my mind, there isn't a disclosed sum here, is there?
No, but, and in fact, I don't recall the original, pardon me, amount, but
so if Yahoo's planning on killing it off, my first thought is there's the question mark over how much it's been sold for. And then if you're talking about buying an entity which is contact based, this is where I think you really get into the hard part of putting a value on those contacts. How much is that many contacts worth? And if you look at the valuation of Facebook as it, as its last stand of investment was, you know, the last injection of capital that they got and sold off some shares, you were talking something stupid. You know, there was $50 billion worth of company in Facebook just because of the fact it's got 500 million users. The fact that, that maybe 100 million of those users are non-active anyway hasn't crossed into it. And if you talk about actually just, let's say that even if they all were, you're talking about every single user buying $400 worth of product to get the $500 billion back. So, you know, that's a huge investment for advertisers and so on. So, again, the devil in the detail here with this one, as we said earlier on, I think the key part of that is perhaps how much it's sold for, as opposed to just the number of contacts, no?
Well, these guys certainly have the budget. I mean, they made $1 billion. So, but they would have to see return. This already has a built-in loyal user database. But I interrupted you, Kyle.
No, I was just being a smart aleck, actually. No, I'm just trying to see the point of it still. I know it was about bookmarks at first, but that's pretty much what it was about. And I can kind of see the idea of going in a Facebook direction, but there's another part of me that says, what's the point anymore with that? We've got MySpace. It has no space on the web anymore, shall we say. Friendster closed its doors this week. Twitter is obviously the thing. If you're going to do the tweets, the Twitter is the place. If you're going to do the Facebook, Facebook is the place. I'm trying to see a market for that's left on the web right now. I mean, to me, it's already cornered. There needs to be the next step. Now, if they can do the next step, maybe that's a good idea. But if it's just going to be a carbon copy of everything else that's out there,
exactly,
I can't see the point.
How are they going to grow it as a business to be able to make money out of it?
You can't recoup capital investment through copying. It's got to be something bigger and different. And from the way it's being described here, they're talking about the way that users save and share content. Well, I don't think it gets a lot more efficient than Twitter. And how many delicious users are already on Twitter? I would say significant numbers. And then if you're doing is Facebook really a content sharing platform? I'm not a great Facebook user. So, you know, is that the main thrust of Facebook, content sharing, or is it reconnection?
It depends what you consider content, but there's people sharing stuff like crazy on there, whether it's photos or links or whatever.
Or apps.
And remember, they also just they changed their like button so that instead of just saying on your social feed, so-and-so like this, it now actually tweets, to use a better, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
It puts onto your news feed the actual text of that website. And what else? Dane, do you remember, maybe you guys just talked about this, but it's more than just says that you like this now. And I remember it now really tries to draw other readers to that webpage.
You're saying by putting it in your Facebook news feed?
Well, yeah, they did something more than that. You're
saying it's like a social
media? Are you talking about the send button or the like button?
The like button.
You know,
I remember. It was that they combined, they got rid of the share button and they combined its functionality with the like button.
Right. So it wasn't just a thumbs up, it was a thumbs up and this is where I went.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the love button now.
Well, no, I mean, that's a psychological principle called social proof, which is where they were going with the old purchasing thing. You know, when you bought something in a shop, what was the name of the system? It came with a B, I think. The system that when you bought something in a shop, it automatically...
Beacon,
that's it. Thank you. It went out on Facebook and said that you'd bought this thing at this place. And that's a psychological principle called social proof. So when you see one person standing looking up in the sky, everyone walks past and looks at them like they're mad. When you see four people, all of a sudden 100 people are looking upwards at the sky because people like to flock. You know, we're all sheep at heart.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Can I pose a question about whether you guys think it's possible to revive any web brand? I know that guys like, you know, Dig made a couple of stabs at trying to relaunch themselves. AOL now is trying to say, you know, we're cool again. Can Delicious Be Cool Again. Is it possible to have a second act as a web brand, or are you just done? Once you had your moment in the sun, that's as high as you're going.
That's a really good question, because I'm sitting while you're saying that, Dane, thinking to myself, can I think of anything that has recovered? Is there one thing that has had a comeback on the web? And I can't think of one. Chat room.
No, I think the web is all about moving forward. I think the web, particularly when we're talking about social networking, it, like you said, Ewan, we're sheep. We flock to it. What's the next? What's the latest? What's the greatest? I really think that's what the internet is about. Ooh, it was Friendster, and then it was MySpace, and now it's Facebook. And we talked about MySpace this, I don't know, a few months ago. We were talking about itself. The value of Facebook. Was it $50 billion, whatever? How could it possibly be worth that? I think it maybe at that time, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but it's such an up and down thing that what is hot today is old news tomorrow. I think that's the way the web works. It's that fast paced now. And before long, we'll be talking about you had an iPad, really? You know, who knows? It may not be that bad, but it's to me, it's just one of those things. We all flock to what's the latest, what's the greatest. And as soon as somebody says it ain't cool anymore, it ain't cool anymore.
I think that in itself could actually allow that to happen, Kyle, so that something that was cool could become cool again.
I'll tell you the only times that you do see a sort of comeback, and I can't think of an actual website that actually did a comeback either. But I think think about it. Whenever you, I'm thinking kind of like software makes a comeback. Game rendering engines make comebacks, you know, when they release open source versions of Quake and Doom and Unreal. I think that the only times that you see comebacks of, you know, even if they're not web products, but, you know, high tech products with a hardcore user base, is when you have a really strong diehard fan base. And then you give it back to them. You open it up. You make it open source. You return it to the control of the fans. Because I think what happens is these startups get big, and you could extend this to even games, just things that people like that they use their computers for, get popular because people feel like it's innovative. It's a small group of passionate people working on it with very innovative ideas, and people love that, and they identify with that. Then it gets too big, it gets sold, it becomes corporate, they sell out, exactly how Delicious did. You know, they gave up control to Yahoo. Yahoo became, you know, let it die on the vine. They sold out. It became this kind of corporate thing that became not cool anymore. But like Dane said, there is enough of a strong fan base that if they gave the power back to them, and kind of opened it back up to them, I think that might be the way that they could restore its former glory, maybe more so than trying to just approach it like assign a CEO to it and try to grow it into a business. They might first try some kind of broad opening, multi-platform, open source kind of mechanism. And then if that gets another foothold, a fresh foothold for it, then they might try to monetize that later on.
See, what you're describing there, I think, is that not the way that Twitter actually went? But the difference was kind of Twitter had stagnated as a social interaction platform until the community got hold of it and started creating the cool APIs, the trending topics and all that kind of stuff. And then the TweetDeck came along and made it more accessible and functional. So to a certain degree, although it wasn't a comeback because Twitter was still on the increase, that was the mode that they used to expand rapidly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really good point. But I still can't think of anyone that's come back.
No, I can't think of anybody. Tone made a very funny comment, though, and he's kind of right. Vista made it so that XP was actually cool again, which is kind of funny. It was the truth, actually. Vista sucked so much, we did go back to XP. I see Eric's point there.
Sorry, mate. Can you honestly say anyone sat in a boardroom going, what are we going to do now? We're on the decline. Tell you what, let's release something crappier.
I think in the case of...
Only Microsoft can do that.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, Eric. Go ahead.
I couldn't hear you. I think in the case of something like this, where it's I think this is more analogous to something like a band or a artist or musician or film director or some kind of person that has a large cult following or group that then sells out and becomes corporate sellouts. I think that's what it's more analogous to. And if you think about it, like in terms of that, as opposed to websites in particular, I think you do see a bit more potential for comeback historically.
So it's the Shawshank Redemption.
Mozilla? How about Mozilla, Eric? Does that fit in your model?
Absolutely. There was Netscape, and that they'd spun that to open source, and then that grew a massive following.
Well, I was going to say, if we're moving slightly away from websites, I can certainly. What about Apple?
Certainly.
Yeah, as a corporation, I mean, they were in the toilet. Absolutely.
It's really scary that you actually mentioned that, Sarah. That iPad is having an effect on you, isn't it? Just being in the house near
just,
you,
just, you know,
is giving you that warm, fuzzy Steve Jobs feeling. Is it?
You got a black turtleneck, don't you? Did anyone see that South Park episode this week?
No, what was this?
I was so mad that I hadn't seen that before I did Tech Talk Back, because I would have opened the show with that. I would have shown clips. They did a full-out parody of the Apple situation, the Apple data breach, and the parodying about what types of things you sign your rights away to do when you click on the I agree button in iTunes. And I mean, they didn't like abstract it to some other computer company. It was Apple. It was Steve Jobs. They had a perfect caricature of Steve Jobs.
Yeah,
I saw, looked exactly like him.
Yeah, no, I saw that bit.
Oh, did you see it?
No, I saw the report on it.
Oh yeah.
I saw the episode. I don't know. It was a bit kind of tasteless, I guess. I could see if Apple wanted to sue or not. But
well, no, same you know time, what it was. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, at the same time though, it did get you thinking. How many times do we click on I agree? It did get you thinking.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was exceptionally gross and disgusting, but were you aware that the thing they were parodying was the film called Human Centipede?
No, actually, no, I didn't, because I haven't seen that film.
Yeah, there was
an independent film. That makes a whole lot of sense now.
Yeah, that was, they didn't make that up or anything. They completely lifted that plot, that idea. And if you've never heard of that and you don't know what it is, do not search for it. Because I've only saw the trailer, I've never seen the film, and it's the type of thing that scars you for life. You never get that image or that idea out of your mind. So don't go looking for it. But if you are an existing South Park fan and probably wouldn't be fazed by that kind of stuff, take a look at the episode, because they have a lot of great scenes where they're talking to Steve Jobs, or they're at the Apple store trying to talk to the geniuses, and they parody that. And overall, it's very funny about what you give away when you just click I agree without reading.
No, Apple's resurgence, though, didn't come through an openness and a delivery of the open source back to the fanboy, did it? That's the trouble.
No, but I was just using it as an example of a company that were doing well to start with, went away, and then have come back strongly again.
So I returned to a single-minded vision. With the person who created it. So that's another example. Sometimes when properties, you can look at film franchises, for instance, when they sell the franchise off to another entity, sometimes the original director or writer or owner comes back and reacquires that and breathes new life into it that way with his original ideas. That's another way you can do it.
Hmm. Yeah.
Not the case with Delicious, but at least they are web entrepreneurs, and maybe they can breathe some good ideas into it like they did with YouTube.
It'd be a nice idea, wouldn't it?
Mm. It'd be interesting. It'd be interesting to see exactly what they paid for this, because if they paid a lot for it, then they're obviously going to be wanting to get a return. If they got it for pennies on the dollar, then maybe they are going to, you know, open it up and make it all nice. I mean, I think we're living in a society now where greed is no longer fashionable. People really turn the other way when, you know, if you go oil companies, you know, big company, whatever it may be, greed isn't fashionable anymore. And we're in a society now where people can easily just switch and go another way, because usually there is an alternative now. And particularly with me, if it's a free alternative, all the more I love it. So, but
I think greed is still pretty fashionable, but I don't think it was ever fashionable in the world of the internet. That's always been very egalitarian, yes. Open and sharing.
That's
as long as there's money in it.
Putting it, Eric.
Unless you're Gordon Gekko, of course.
It's always been egalitarian and open and sharing as long as there's money in it. And then
no, wait, I'm trying to look it up. It looks like
has the video frozen anyone?
They bought it. What?
It looks like it might have done, actually.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, the video froze.
The video has frozen.
No, now it's back.
Now it's fine. It's obviously just that camera.
I have the number here. They sold it for $5
million. Oh, you found it.
That was a million. $5
million. Are we talking about Delicious?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Because I couldn't find the number anywhere.
Really?
I'm sorry. Every time I start talking, it cuts off the audio, so I can't hear you guys. They sold it for $5 million. Yahoo had bought it for $15 million. And since the people they sold it to were billionaires, the YouTube founders, it's easy to speculate that they just bought it like a collector would of something like
a person. I was going to say, that's just loose change to them, isn't it?
Sorry, what?
That's the lunch bill.
That's loose change.
Exactly. If they just bought it and then totally turned it open and gave it away for free, that would be well within the possibility if you just look at what they paid for it relative to their self-worth.
I could see it now. I mean, it's funny, we're sitting here going, yeah, with $5 million, geez, it's like they just reached into their pocket and paid it outright. Still $5 million, but
yeah, but if you've got 1.65 million billion dollars for YouTube,
yeah, before tax,
that's money to burn, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, I kind of agree with that. I think it's funny to sit here and say, yeah, $5 million, well, geez, yeah, they could just make that free now. I mean, that's nothing to them. God, I wish I could say
how millionaire.
No, but it does actually go some way towards showing what you were saying, Carl, in terms of how they approach the future with Delicious, doesn't it?
It might be how kind of you see celebrities, actors, and people who have millions of dollars often just randomly buy the rights to old films and old music catalogs and old intellectual property just because. They like it. They identify with it personally as something that was, artistically. And they're like, oh, that's up for auction. Oh, I don't want to see that fall into the wrong hands. I don't know what I'll do with it, but I've got the money. I may as well buy it.
I'm going to buy your songs.
I was just thinking Michael Jackson. I need the Beatles badly. If I want to do anything in the podcast tonight, I'm afraid I'm going to have to come in here and talk. So. Do apologise. My camera's frozen solid. I don't know why.
Oh, we got a big head in there.
Right. Have we got any cool thingies?
Oh, cool thingies.
Nope. Nope.
Right, it's been a great show. Thank you very much. Dane, do you want to start us off, or are you without cool thingy?
No, I'm not. I don't have a cool thingy.
Okie doke.
Let me. Why think did you
tell? Actually, Dane, tell us about CamTwist, because you've gotten into that a lot more than any of us have.
Really, you guys have not played with CamTwist?
Played is probably the better word in terms of studied. No.
I want to credit one of my online assistants. Two of them, Ryan Hamill and Jose Betancourt, who helped me out getting my show started. And one of the tools we use is CamTwist on Hey.com. And it's a free software. It's, you know, the thing is about Twit is I never had the time to really invest in learning how to switch. So I really had to learn how to switch after leaving and had to do it with this software, Switcher. And it enables me to capture all sorts of things like a webcam, Skype. I can plug in, you know, images. Like I'm going to show you a little image of South Park right now, or I can put in TweetDeck, a chat room, any sort of thing. It took a little bit of doing to figure out how it worked, but it's
very
quite
powerful.
Elegant.
I mean, I've used it just for the purposes of showing sections of desktops, because you can show a custom view. So like my 30-inch monitor here, I've got all the production stuff on the left and I've got all the browsers on the right. I could set the right hand side of the screen up to show in the production stuff in the live feed, and I need to think about doing that, but I need a bit more grunt for the computer in order to do it, which is one of the points that's been made in the chat room. It is an incredibly powerful tool, and even when you get into the effects and things like that, there's a ton of effects you can do with it. Lower thirds.
You can do lower thirds. which I'm showing now, real simple. You know, time and all sorts of things.
And totally free.
Utterly.
Yeah.
There you go. That's Dane's pick, Cam Twist. Good pick, mate.
Cool.
He picked it and didn't even know it.
Yeah. Well bulldozed. Sarah, what's your cool thingy, mate?
My cool thingy was actually something that was on the list of things we might have talked about, and I'm glad we didn't because I wanted to talk about it. And that's that there's a new Android app out this week from Google for Google Docs. And I must admit, this is something I've actually been waiting for a while. So when I actually heard it's come out, I downloaded it straight away and I've been playing with it. And it's something that I will actually be using a great deal. I've already been using it a bit and absolutely love it. Yeah, it's not great for if you want to type in spreadsheets and stuff like that, but the most of the things I'm using it for when I'm out and about is actually to recall information that I've got stored in a Google Doc somewhere, and for that it's perfect. Gives me exactly what I need, and previously I've been doing it in a browser on the phone, but this makes it an awful lot easier. I absolutely love it.
Very good. Pricey? Free? Excellent. Carl, your cool thingy.
My cool thingy is Fring, and the reason why that is because this week they came out with group video call chat.
I saw that.
That's free, unlike Skype. And Fring's been a little bit back and forth. They actually started out when you could jailbreak your iPhone. Well, you can still jailbreak your iPhone, but when you first didn't have Skype on the iPhone, it was a great alternative, and it really has gotten better as the years went by. I really wish, though, there's one thing I wish they would do. Put out a desktop app, because I think if they did that, Skype might be shaken a little bit. Because if you got free group calling and you could do it on your phone, do it on the desktop and all that, people might look a different way.
So just to throw in the devil's advocate point here, is that where it does become a leap too far for Fring, though, because Fring is predominantly fairly low quality video in comparison to Skype, though, as well, isn't it?
It is, but I've noticed with when trying to use the group calling thing, well, I haven't used the whole group calling, but I think it was Alex that I actually tried the Fring to Fring with on the iPhone before they had the video for Skype. It came out like a week later, but it actually was very decent quality. I think they've really improved their service over the last year.
So now compare that to FaceTime then.
FaceTime still sucks.
No, because FaceTime, in terms of when you actually do get a connection, the video quality can be very good.
Yeah, but I mean, me and you tried it with the Mac, and it didn't work with the crap. So it had to be iPhone to iPhone. Mac. That's why I'm saying if Fring would do with a desktop app, I'm saying I think Skype should be a little scared.
Yeah, what I'm saying is, though, is Fring staying away from a desktop app, stop app, because it hasn't got the video quality?
Possibly.
Okay.
That's a good point. I don't know. Anyways, that's my pick. Thanks for putting it down.
No. Free stuff's free stuff, dude.
Yeah, no, it's free. I just thought it was really cool they came out with something like this for group, for, you know, mobile to mobile devices, you know, four people at once and free, you know, because Skype is charging for it now. So
that is kind of cool. Eric, have you thought of anything, or would you want to just give in?
I'd actually like to recommend a new tablet that I got this at Staples. It's about a 5-inch tablet. It has about 300 pages on it, and you can write whatever you want using pen, pencil of any color. And it's very cheap. It's maybe about 30 cents, and I highly recommend it.
And you tape does it tape to the underside of your desk well?
Yes, it has yes, you can absolutely do that. Very lightweight.
Does it come with them free ink thingies, you know, that you can at the end and you can write on? Does it come with one of those?
No, those are sold separately, unfortunately. It locks up quite a bit and you have to restart it. Other than that, it's great. Love this tablet.
Thank you very much. Excellent pick. 30 cents, though, Carl. A bit steep for you, I would have thought.
Yeah, I'm still. You sure they ain't got a free version of that there, Eric?
Well, you know what, Carl? You can get that in different sizes. If you put it like
under your
jacket
or under in your pocket and just kind of walk out very quickly, you might be able to make it free.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel like going back to prison.
There also might be a big bloke called Blubber looking to increase the size of your anus. Right.
On that note.
My
is that your cool thingy?
Yeah, Uranus, the planet. Bubba's Michael thingy. No, the Michael thingy is absolutely fabulous. I got asked to try it this week, and someone said, you've got to try TweetDeck 2 for iOS, for the iPhone, and see whether you like it or not. And I didn't. I started playing with it, and I was like, well, this is crap. This is worse than the old thing was. And then I started realizing that there was little things that you could do, and they've got a pinch and rotate on your Windows. So when you open it, you have your standard Windows that used to slide backwards and forwards for your messages, for your homepage, for your DMs, that kind of stuff. But if you look here, there we go, that's the screen. If you pinch in, what you end up with is a little tiny version of it, and then it carousels round and round, backwards and forwards, through your screens in a slightly lower view. And you can open multiple accounts, whereas the previous multiple accounts didn't work properly. This one worked absolutely stunningly. And then when you want to get the one that you want, you can do that or just double tap it, and you're in. It's free, and it's stunning. And it now I've got used to it, I think it's the best thing since sliced bread. So TweetDeck 2 for iOS. There you go. Classic.
We need it on Android.
We need it on your Tweet. You've not got an Android? Or two? You haven't got two?
Two, yeah.
No. You got it on Android, yeah.
Is it available on Android?
TweetDeck 1 certainly two. Was, but 2, I don't know. You'll have to have a quick look now while we do the sponsors.
4 will be.
Our sponsors, UK2.net, we need to talk about them because they have been absolutely stunning this month. We've had a stellar month, it's got to be said. We're nearly at 3 terabytes. And it's all been audio. There's no video gone out from this. And we are doing video. We've been recording video the last couple of weeks, and it is going to go up on an iTunes feed as an MP4 file. So that's coming as well as... I don't know what to say each week about UK2 because I just gush about them constantly because they really do look after us. But that's it. You know, that's the whole point. The whole network exists because of UK2.net and the fact that I know we do the shows and stuff, but you imagine trying to take 3 terabytes over to Libsyn just on audio alone. I can't see that it would. And they've we've had hit rates at 26,000 downloads in 12 hours, and people have not complained that they couldn't get the podcast. It hasn't fallen over. It's been absolutely rock solid. They are adding 3 extra nodes to the server next week, just to compensate and make sure that we don't have any problems, because we are running kind of near the limit on the services that they've got. They've also got some services for BTN listeners. So if you listen to the Bagel Tech Network, then and you want a VPS server, go down to UK2. First thing to do is go to our website, bageltechnews.com. When you get there, scroll yourself down to the bottom, and you'll see UK2.net's logo on the bottom corner. That's got to click through. Click from there, they'll know we sent you. And when you check out your VPS server, use the offer code BAGELTECH and you will get 1 free month off your first year with the VPS server. If you go with the co-location services and use the offer code BAGELTECH, then you'll get a free iPad 2 and you'll get a month off the co-location services. So UK2.net, our hosts, our sponsors, our bandwidth providers, please use the click-through. Just stop whatever you're doing now. Go to our homepage, use that click-through, and just show support for them and for us, because without them, we're absolutely stuffed. And the other person there is Don McAllister. He's been a great pal to the network, comes on the Mac Show every week, and he's offered for all Bagel Tech listeners, if you want to go to Screencasts Online and sign up for his fantastic tutorials for Mac software, he'll give you 50% off if you use the offer code Bagel Tech. So thank you, Don. Very much appreciated. Right, thank you. There's a huge UK2 appeared thanks to Dane on his screen and Cam Twist. There we go. It was that quick. Brilliant job, mate. Right, Dane, where can we get a hold of you, mate?
I put up another thing on Cam Twist, which is my URL. There's 2 things I'd really like to send out a plea to. One, I'd really like to try to pump up the downloads to Facebook this week. So please go on on iTunes and just subscribe. And if you don't like it, I don't mind if you unsubscribe, but just subscribe for a couple weeks and see if you like it. iTunes, Facebook this week. Also, please friend me Facebook this week /FTW show.
There we go. Give it a
Thanks
try.
Thanks for having me on.
No, pleasure, mate. I mean, you're always welcome on here anyway, because it's always a good conversation. I have subscribed, but I haven't listened yet, I'm afraid, so I have to apologize.
Oh, I don't care about that.
At least he's honest.
Yeah. True.
Unlike Zuckerberg.
Sarah, where can you get hold of you?
You can get hold of me on my website, which is sarahjaneuk.com, or on Twitter at sarahjaneuk.
Excellent. Carl?
Twitter, easiest place, twitter.com/KyleSwagger, Swagger with 1G only.
Cheers, mate. And Eric?
twitter.com/EricLanigan, and of course ericlanigan.com. Yesterday's Tech Talk Pack is posted. That's ericlanigan.
And you can get me, Ewan Rankin, on at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. Now, the last thing to talk about is the Bagel Tech Bash, because it's definitely happening. It's on the 8th of July. If you want to come along, you just need to send me an email that says that you're coming, and I'll stick you on the spreadsheet, because we're limited on numbers. But there's going to be all day, we'll be doing all the shows from wherever we end up holding it. At the moment, it's looking like the rugby club with a pig roast and some real ales and stuff. There will be drinking all day, unfortunately, so the shows may not be up to much. But we're going to have some fun, and we'll celebrate our third birthday and Sarah's 22nd birthday on that day. Bagel Tech Bath, 8th of July. Bagel Tech Bash, 8th of July.
That's great.
Come to Birmingham here in the UK and get drunk with us. And I think as well, I'm having a chat, and there's someone I've got to tap up tomorrow at the rugby club, but I think we may be able to pitch some tents and stuff like that on the practice pitch. So you don't have to worry about what you're drunk and stuff. Brilliant.
I'm very sad I won't be able to make it.
Please. Well,
as evidenced by your picture. I love that.
Save up and come over, mate. Everyone's welcome. We're going to do the podcast, but we need to get a few dongles down there, a few data dongles to be able to stream. So, but we won't be doing, we'll only be doing one video in and out. We won't be taking the whole Skype wall down there.
Or a very long network cable.
Yeah. 3.5 miles from where I live. I don't know if you keep the pressure up there. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week as normal. Bagel Broadcast Friday starts at 11 o'clock next Friday with the photo show, then 1 o'clock with the match show, and then finally the big show at 10 p.m. So come and join us then. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening.